Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
At 3:45 in the morning, on January 18th, 1884, the lookout aboard the passenger steamer City of Columbus screams a warning into the darkness. Devil's Bridge buoy is off the port bow. It should be starboard. Second Mate Edward Harding yells, "Hard a port," but it's too late. The ship strikes jagged underwater rocks at full speed. The grinding crack tears through the iron hull. The sound echoes across black water like the scream of tearing metal. Freezing Atlantic water floods the port saloon in seconds. Passengers and nightclothes rush to the deck, only to be swept into the black water by a massive wave that rises from nowhere. Women in frozen nightgowns disappear beneath foam. 40 men scramble into the rigging as their hands freeze and waves crash over them. They'll hang there for 7 hours in the darkness. Some will fall, most will die. This is the deadliest New England maritime disaster of the 19th century. And it happened just half a mile from shore. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History, the podcast that takes a stroll down the main streets and back alleys of the past to uncover how local stories shaped the world. I'm Shane Waters, and today we're exploring how a single navigation error on a cold January night sent 103 people to their deaths within sight of rescue. Tonight we're traveling to Gay Head, Massachusetts, now officially called Aquinnah, the western tip of Martha's Vineyard, where a deadly reef, 7 hours of frozen darkness, and a small indigenous community created both New England's worst maritime disaster and its most heroic rescue story of the 1800s. Aquinnah sits at the westernmost point of Martha's Vineyard. The clay cliffs there are quite striking. Layers of rust-red, gray, and white-striped sediment rising 150 feet above the Atlantic. But it's what extends from those cliffs that made this spot one of the most dangerous points on the entire New England coast. Devil's Bridge. According to the Aquinnah Wampanoag, Devil's Bridge is actually Moshup's Bridge, named after the giant from their creation stories. It's an underwater ledge of massive boulders extending over a mile from the cliffs. At low tide, you can see hundreds of rocks jutting from the water. At high tide, they're just beneath the surface, waiting. Strong tidal currents create what sailors called a treacherous rip, where water flowing over Devil's Bridge collides with complex currents running through Vineyard Sound. Picture yourself approaching Gay Head at night in 1884. There's no GPS, no radar, just the beam from the lighthouse sweeping across black water every 10 seconds, illuminating nothing but empty ocean. You know Devil's Bridge is somewhere ahead, an area of jagged rocks 3/4 of a mile square, according to the lighthouse keeper who lived there. But you can't see them. You're navigating by the position of a single buoy, trying to stay far enough offshore to avoid the rocks, while not straying so far you lose your bearings entirely. One wrong calculation, one miscalculation of the current pushing your ship sideways, and you're on the rocks. And that's what happened to the city of Columbus. The city of Columbus was, by all accounts, a well-maintained modern vessel. Built in 1878 at Chester, Pennsylvania, she was 275 feet long, with an iron hull and a 1,500 horsepower steam engine. She'd been making the Boston to Savannah run for 6 years without incident. On January 17, 1884, the Columbus departed Boston at 3 o'clock p.m. with 147 people aboard, 80 first-class passengers, 22 in steerage, and a crew of 45 under Captain Schuyler E. Wright. About 1/3 of the passengers were women and children. Many were what newspapers called invalids, folks heading south to escape the harsh northeastern winter for their health. According to the January 25, 1884 edition of the Vineyard Gazette, weather at departure showed a strong breeze from the westward, clear skies. Captain Wright was highly experienced. He navigated these waters dozens of times. This was supposed to be a routine voyage. But here's the thing. Routine trips can become disasters in seconds when the margin for error is a few hundred yards of black ocean. What happened in the early hours of January 18th would expose a fatal gap in maritime safety. Passenger manifests that went down with ships, making it impossible for families to know who survived. It would spark a national conversation about navigation responsibility and crew conduct during disasters. And it would show that sometimes the difference between tragedy and total catastrophe is a small community of indigenous fishermen willing to row into deadly seas to save people who could literally see safety but couldn't reach it. Let's get back to that cold January night. The voyage started exactly as planned. Captain Wright passed Cross Rip Lightship at midnight, according to testimony before the Board of Steamboat Inspectors. Weather was fine. He continued past East Chop, then West Chop, with a strong west-southwest breeze pushing the ship along. After passing Nobska Point around 2 a.m., Wright made a decision that would haunt him forever. He went below to his cabin, escaping the biting cold of the open bridge for the warmth of his quarters. Later, alone with his thoughts about what that warmth cost, he would testify, "It was very cold, everything was working well. I went below a short time. That brief retreat from numbing wind would save his life." The passengers who never escaped the icy water below weren't as fortunate. He left the bridge in the hands of Second Mate Edward Harding. Harding was qualified. This wasn't unusual on overnight passages. But he was about to face a navigational challenge that required instant, correct judgment, and he would not get it right. The problem started with the weather. That strong west-southwest breeze wasn't just pushing the ship forward, it was also pushing the Columbus south toward Devil's Bridge. The racing propeller and rough seas added to the lateral drift. In darkness, with no visual reference points except the occasional lighthouse beam, it's quite easy to lose track of exactly where you are. The currents there were quite unpredictable, according to every sailor who'd navigated those waters. Navigation in 1884 relied on spotting buoys and calculating position based on known hazards. The Devil's Bridge buoy marked the edge of the danger zone. If you saw it off your starboard side, you were safely north of the rocks, hugging the proper channel. If you saw it off your port side, you drifted too far south. You were in the danger zone. At 3:45 a.m., the lookout suddenly yelled to Harding. He'd spotted the Devil's Bridge buoy off the port bow. In that instant, Harding knew. The ship was off course. They were heading directly into the rock field. Harding immediately ordered Quartermaster Roderick A. McDonald to port, trying to turn the ship north, away from the rocks. Captain Wright, hearing the commotion, rushed from his cabin, shouting hard a port. But even as the words left his mouth, he could see in the moonlight the Devil's Bridge buoy about 300 yards away, 2 points forward of the beam. He saw the error. He understood the mathematics of disaster. Full steam, no distance to turn, rocks ahead. The city of Columbus, steaming at full speed, struck what the Vineyard Gazette called a double ledge of submerged rocks with tremendous force. The sound was catastrophic. The jagged rocks tore a massive hole in the port bow. Iron plates buckled and screamed. The grinding crack echoed across the water like the ship itself was dying. Wright immediately ordered the engines reversed. The ship backed about twice her length, briefly free from the rocks. For a moment, there was hope, but the damage was catastrophic. She was flooding forward fast. Water poured through the gash in unstoppable torrents. Wright ordered the jib hoisted, attempts to head north toward shore. But the ship lists heavily to port, the Plankshire about 4 feet underwater now. Waves break continuously over the deck, each one pushing her lower. Wright makes one final attempt to drive over the obstruction. This makes everything worse. The stern goes completely underwater. Within minutes of striking, it's clear the city of Columbus is doomed. Wright gathers the 87 passengers from below. He's trying to explain their situation calmly. They need life preservers. They need to stay cool. But before he can finish speaking, a massive rush of water floods the cabin. Everyone is forced to the top deck. According to survivors who testified afterward, that's when the wave hit. The massive swell that would seal this disaster's place in history as New England's deadliest maritime tragedy.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The giant wave strikes the listing ship and sweeps people off the deck. According to testimony before the Board of Steamboat Inspectors, it happens in seconds. Passengers in nightclothes, many still groggy from sleep, suddenly in the frozen Atlantic. Every single woman and child aboard the city of Columbus goes into the water. Many men, too. The temperature is below freezing. The water temperature hovers just above it, cold enough to kill in minutes. Most of those swept overboard drown quickly in the darkness, their frozen bodies pulled under by heavy nightclothes. Some passengers never even made it to the deck. They drowned in their staterooms as water rushed through the ship, trapped behind doors they couldn't open against the flood. It's believed around 60 people died in those first terrible minutes. One wave, one moment, gone. The crew attempts to launch lifeboats, but ocean swells smash the boats against the iron sides of the ship, destroyed instantly before they can be lowered. Wood splinters. Rope snaps. Hope breaks. About 40 men manage to climb into the rigging of the two sail masts. They cling to the ropes as waves crash over them, as wind howls, as temperatures remain below freezing. They'll hang there for 7 hours. Picture yourself clinging to rigging in complete darkness, your clothes soaked through in the first wave. Freeze stiff against your skin. Salt spray in your mouth makes you gag every time you gasp for air. Your hands, numb now, barely feel the rope anymore. You tighten your grip, but you can't tell if your fingers are actually responding. Every wave that crashes over you drains a little more strength, a little more hope. You can see the lighthouse on the cliff, so close you could almost reach it, if you could just let go and swim. But you know you can't. You've watched other men try. You've seen them disappear into the black water. Survivors later describe watching their companions freeze to death in the rigging, hands locked onto ropes, unable to let go even in death. Others lose their grip, benumbed by cold, and fall into the sea while their companions watch helplessly. Each splash in the darkness means one fewer voice calling out, one fewer person who might make it to morning. According to the Vineyard Gazette, which interviewed survivors in the days after, heartrending scenes as viewed from the rigging. The ships continued settling. The stern is completely underwater. Only the bow and the two masts remain above the waves. If the masts go under, everyone still alive will drown. But here's the cruel part. They can see shore. The Gayhead lighthouse beam sweeps across them every 10 seconds. A reminder that safety is just half a mile away. They can see the cliffs. They can probably see lights in windows where families sleep unaware. So close and completely unreachable. At dawn, 7 hours after the ship struck, lighthouse keeper Horatio Pease spots something strange through his spyglass. A white light burning on Devil's Bridge, where no light should be. He studies it. The light doesn't move. And then he sees them, dark shapes, clinging to masts, jutting from the water. Pease sends his assistant, Frederick Poole, to rouse the neighbors. Word spreads quickly through the Wampanoag community of Gayhead. Men grab boats. They don't wait for official orders. They don't wait for the revenue cutter that's still hours away. They can see people dying half a mile offshore. That's all they need to know. Thomas Manning, a Wampanoag whaler, who'd recently returned from a successful voyage, launches his small boat into seas that would terrify most men. From shore, the scene is clear. a small craft appearing through spray and crashing waves, rowing toward masts jutting from churning water. Each pull of the oars fights current and wind. Each wave threatens to capsize the tiny rescue boat. Manning reaches the wreck. Now comes the hardest part. The men in the rigging have been there for 7 hours. Their hands are frozen to the ropes, literally frozen, fingers locked in position. Manning has to pry them loose, one finger at a time, working quickly because every second counts. Some men are unconscious, hanging by ropes wrapped around their arms. Manning climbs into the rigging himself, ties ropes around unresponsive bodies, lowers them into his boat. He makes multiple trips. What drove him back each time? The knowledge that men were still clinging to those masts. The sound of voices calling for help across the water. The simple fact that he could do something about it. By all accounts, Thomas Manning saved 20 lives that morning. 20 men who would have died without his small boat and strong arms. More Wampanoag rescuers arrived. Chief Simon Johnston, who managed the Massachusetts Humane Society life-saving station at nearby Chilmark, organizes additional crews. Volunteer fishermen and whalers row out in waves. When the revenue cutter Dexter finally arrives, Lieutenant John U. Rhodes attempts to reach the deck. A piece of floating debris strikes him in the leg. A deep gash. His crew pulls him back aboard. Rhodes changes his clothes, refuses medical attention, insists on trying again. According to witnesses who later testified, Lieutenant Rhodes refused to abandon the attempt. He ties a rope around himself, dives into freezing water, climbs the rigging to reach men too weak to help themselves. By noon, 29 men have been rescued. They're taken to homes in Aquinawa, where Wampanoag families build fires, prepare food, provide dry clothes. The community opens its doors to strangers without hesitation. 103 people died within sight of safety they could see but couldn't reach. The City of Columbus disaster forced immediate changes in maritime safety. The biggest problem? Passenger safety manifests went down with a ship. Families had no way to know if their loved ones survived. Newspapers couldn't publish accurate victim lists. Even the official death count was disputed for weeks because nobody knew exactly who had been on board. Within months, Congress mandated that shipping companies maintain duplicate passenger lists, one aboard ship, one kept ashore, one filed with port authorities. Today, every airline, every cruise ship, every ferry maintains multiple passenger manifests in separate locations as standard practice. That reform alone saved countless families from the agony of not knowing. The disaster also sparked a national conversation about crew conduct during disasters. Multiple survivor accounts claimed crew members abandoned ship and lifeboats, leaving passengers behind. Captain Wright testified before the Board of Steamboat Inspectors that he stayed with the ship, but others suggested his decision to go below at the critical moment showed negligence. The investigation couldn't definitively assign blame. The navigation error might have happened regardless of who was on the bridge, but the questions it raised changed how the maritime industry thought about command responsibility. The Aquinawa Wampanoag rescuers received national recognition. Congress authorized gold life-saving medals for Lieutenant Rhodes and Thomas Manning, rare recognition for Indigenous Americans in 1884. A public subscription raised $2,300, worth over $70,000 today, to be distributed among the rescuers. To be fair, perhaps the most important lasting change was in how the Revenue Cutter Service, the precursor to the modern Coast Guard, coordinated with local communities during maritime disasters. The Columbus Rescue showed that sometimes the most effective rescue efforts come from local people who know the waters and are willing to risk everything, not from official vessels that can't safely access the danger zone. Today's Coast Guard still partners with local fishing communities for near-shore rescues in treacherous waters, maintaining those relationships that proved so vital in 1884. Today, the wreck of the City of Columbus still lies in about 40 feet of water off Oquinawa. Divers occasionally visit the site when conditions allow. The Woods Hole Historical Museum displays artifacts recovered from the wreck, pieces of china, ship fittings, personal items that tell the story of that January night. And in Oquinawa, the story of Thomas Manning rowing into deadly seas to save strangers is still told by his descendants. A reminder that heroism doesn't require official authority or fancy equipment. Sometimes it just requires a small boat, strong arms, and the willingness to help people in desperate need. Manning's great-great-granddaughter served as Wampanoag tribal president in the 1980s, carrying forward the legacy of service that defined that January morning. The City of Columbus disaster is New England's deadliest maritime tragedy of the 19th century, but it's also the story of a small indigenous community that refused to watch people die within sight of shore. When navigation failed and official rescue struggled, Thomas Manning and the Oquinawa Wampanoag proved that sometimes the difference between tragedy and total catastrophe is a community willing to row into hell to pull strangers from freezing water. I'm Shane Waters. Every hometown has a story. Tonight, it's Oquinawa, Massachusetts, where heroism lives in the memory of boats launched into deadly seas and lives saved despite impossible odds. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone who loves forgotten history. Every share helps keep these stories alive. Good night, friend.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.